Quick gut check. AI is moving fast. Leadership confidence is buffering. Today, we're talking about leadership in the AI era and what leaders are still missing, even the really good ones. Peeps, welcome to Workday Playdate with Improve It. I am Erin Deal, and this is the podcast where we talk about work, leadership, and culture like real humans, not robots. So this month on the show, we are diving into leadership, not job titles, not org charts, leadership and moments that actually matter. And y'all, if there is a moment that actually matters, it is now. So AI is changing how work gets done. It's changing it rapidly. And what I'm seeing is leaders investing in tools while quietly wondering how they're supposed to lead humans through all of this. So today's guest, y'all, oh my God, I could talk to him forever, is someone who has lived inside that tension. Steve Cadigan has built LinkedIn during massive hypergrowth, served as their first chief HR officer. That is the chief HR officer of LinkedIn, and has spent decades advising leaders, companies, and even governments on the future of work. What I love about Steve is that he doesn't romanticize leadership. He tells the truth, and you will see where I'm saying truth here in a minute. Okay. I know I said we were going to talk to Steve, but one second. I just want to talk to you a little bit more about the problem. Okay. Leaders right now are racing towards AI, but many are skipping the hardest part, leadership. We have organizations rolling out tools faster than they're having conversations. Employees are asking big questions. Am I relevant? Am I safe? Do I still matter here? And leaders are asking a different question. How fast can we implement this? The gap is where the trust gets shaky. And this is why this conversation with Steve matters so much, because he has seen, what happens when leaders prioritize efficiency over humanity. But here's the epiphany, y'all. AI does not replace leadership. It exposes it. When work is predictable, leadership can coast. When things get complex, leadership shows. Data backs this up. Even as productivity tools increase, employee engagement is flat or declining. Leaders report feeling less confident today than they did just a few years ago. And now we have more tools than ever, and fewer leaders feel grounded. The solution is not better software alone. It's better leadership behaviors. And this is what today's episode is all about. What leaders need to unlearn, relearn, and finally stop pretending they know. All right. I promised you, Steve. Let's get to it. Here is our playdate with Steve Cadigan. Okay, my peeps. Y'all are in for a treat today. We have Steve Cadigan on the show. Welcome to Workday Playdate, Steve.
Great to be here.
Oh, I'm so excited. I'm going to get my water jug, just give myself some hydration here for the moment. Mm-hmm. Steve, your background is so impressive. The peeps are thrilled to hear from you. We're going to talk today on the show about leadership. That is our monthly theme.
Okay.
What is an intention you want to set for our time together today? It could be a word you want to receive, a word you want to give. What's something that comes to mind?
Trust is definitely on my mind. As I start thinking about what's in front of us, the unpredictability of the landscape, a lot of scary rhetoric around robots are coming for you, AI is going to take your job. So I want to really intentionally focus on trust this year.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I love that word. And I think so many people can resonate with that. It's so funny because I, I'm going to just slip some podcasting secrets. I batch record, and you are the second person I've talked to today about AI. It's on everyone's minds. It's on HR leaders. It's on our clients' minds. It's on our partners' minds. It's on my mind. So I'm so glad we're going to break through a lot of conversation and talk about trust and how we can trust. But I want to start with just a little something fun, okay? This is called the leadership reality check, okay? So in improv, you know, we use improv comedy around here. We say yes and as a way to not necessarily agree, but add to the conversation. And then no because is like a hard stop. No, don't go any further, okay? So I'm going to ask you four different questions, or I'm going to say four different statements, I should say. And I want you to tell me yes and tell me why, or no because and tell me why, okay? It's fun. There's no wrong answers. This is just hearing from Steve. Okay. First question. You ready?
Uh-huh.
AI will replace most leaders. Yes and or no because. Just going real deep.
No, because that is such tired, lame, not backed by any research or science statement, and it's fear-based rhetoric.
Oh, I so agree with that. Okay. Culture can be automated. Yes and or no because?
No. Because culture is the embodiment of organic human beings. Then we cannot be automated. As much as we'd like to try to make us predictable robots, that is just an impossible outcome.
Oh, so good. Okay. Here's another one. Your third statement. Transparency is optional during change.
Boy, you're giving me no because questions here. This is like, you know, no, because trust, the root of trust is belief, and consistency over time is transparency to information. We live in an era where more information is discoverable and expected to be known. And we've got a workforce that's just expecting more, not just what the answer is, but the reasoning and the rationale behind it. So definitely no because.
Oh my gosh. Okay. And you're not, this doesn't make you a no because person. This is a forced activity I'm having Steve do, everyone. Okay. He's a yes ander in real life. Okay. Last one. The future of work rewards control.
Wow. These are really hard.
Yeah.
No, because there is less that is within our control today, less information that we know, more decisions we have to make with incomplete information. So yeah. No, because.
Oh my gosh. Okay. Thank you for playing the reality check game. Yes, Steve, you crushed it. I know you're a yes ander in real life. I feel it. So those were really, in my opinion, also all no because questions. But those are just some of the things and the pain points that we hear our peeps talk about all the time, right?
Right. And let me, I know what's behind all those. What's behind all those are outdated models of thinking and leading that an earlier generation was taught was how we get the outcomes is we've got to control. We've got to control the message. We've got to control the people. We've got to be, you know, have a rock hard culture that can't change and be immovable. And, you know, people are a big expense. So we got to, you know, do more with less. And that's the big objective. And that was a narrative that was healthy for a slower pace of work than we're in right now. And it's really, you know, we've outgrown that in so many ways. And unfortunately for us, we've inherited a pretty sizable population of leadership that still holds some of those beliefs. And it's right. Manifested right now in the get your ass back to the office.
Oh my God, why? Steve. Yes.
Why?
Keep
why
going.
Should I get my, why? Because, yeah, because that's how we roll here. Yeah, but during the pandemic, we made more money. I was more productive. Actually, my life was more productive. I got a better relationship with my spouse and my kids. And I'm more, you know, and I work to live. I don't live to work. And so you're making more money. I don't understand. Why are we doing that? And then the leadership's like, well, I don't know how to lead a remote culture. I was never taught how to do that. I'm terrified that our teamwork is going to dissolve and dissipate because you all are in different places and you're in your pajamas and I see her kitty cat walk across the screen. We're on a Zoom call. Like, that's just freaking me out. Yes, leader. However, look at your bottom line results. Like, people are staying longer. They're having more fun, you know, and, you know, is that one domain if we all have to be together, the only way we can realize a great outcome? And so that's the, you know, there's two sides to that whole issue. I empathize with the leaders that are like, yo, I'm not prepared to lead a really remote team. That scares the hell out of me. And I haven't built my confidence level to know that you're really doing what you're doing unless I see you doing it, right? Mm-hmm. And if you're not here, I'm uncomfortable. So I appreciate that fear, you know? And that's part of when I'm working with leaders, and I've been hired, by the way, this is a really funny story. During the latter parts of the pandemic, I was hired by three Fortune 100 companies, middle management, to help convince their senior management that they didn't have to go back to the office.
I believe that, Steve.
It was a revenue source for me just to be a thought partner. And I said, listen, the first step we want to take is, why do you think they feel the way they do? You need to have empathy and see from their perspective. They are terrified. Plus, they've got tons of invested capital in all these beautiful buildings and fitness centers and on-site cafes and all these other things. You know, you got to be part of the solution, not a hard no.
Yeah.
Not a no because it's a yes and conversation. Otherwise, both of you are going to dig in and both people are going to be miserable, right?
Oh my God. Wait, I have two questions on that. Did you have, what was like, obviously you were doing consultative work. We need to come up with like a kick-ass title for you for that specific role. Like something like get your ass back at home officer, chief, you don't have to go to the office officer. We need some title for that. Something, there's something. We're going to workshop it, Steve. We're going to workshop it. What did
right,
you call
like,
it?
Like WFH, like COWFH. Like my favorite part of that conversation was when businesses would call me in a panic and say, Steve, should we be hybrid? Should we be remote? Should we have them in the office? And I just loved that question. And because my answer was always the same. My answer was yes. They're like, no, it was A, B, or C. And I'm like, yes. And they're like, oh, all of it? I'm like, yes, all of it. Like, it's a big experiment. Like, we don't know. And by the way, when you say hybrid, that's like a waiter or waitress coming to you saying, what would you like to eat? And you saying, I'd like some food, please.
Yeah.
And that's like so incomplete. Like, do you want vegetables? Do you want meat? Do you want it hot? Do you want it cold? Do you want, you know, vegan? It's like hybrid is like what days of the week? How many? With who? What location? Like there's hybrid is not a thing. It's a, you know, about a million different iterations of what it could be, which presents really hard challenges for leaders who are used to the one size fits all. I went to the Tony Soprano school of HR. You quit, you're dead to me.
Yeah.
Reality, which is, you know, again, really outdated. By the way, there are two books that are out there called the Tony Soprano School of Leadership.
Okay,
they actually exist.
And you did the exit so well. It was like so perfectly timed and just right on the money. So you're nailing it. You should do the audio book for that book.
Right?
Hey, my peeps, I hope you are enjoying my conversation with Steve Cadigan. We will be right back after a quick break from our sponsors. Thank you for supporting those who support the show. You're listening to Workday Playdate on the Passion Struck Network. Now back to my conversation with Steve Cadigan. Let's talk about this because I love that this was one of my favorite things that you just said, was that we are... the pace of our work today matters. We aren't fit to do this controlled mindset reality that happened years ago, this outdated model, because the pace of work is so fast. AI is constantly improving and at a rapid rate. So I want to talk to you about leadership behaviors. So what behaviors, I know you're talking about this model of releasing control, but what other behaviors should leaders be doing more of, not less of, in this time?
Okay. I don't know how much time we have, but I'm going to get started. Then you're going to cut me off when you want to take this to a different direction. The first thing is to answer that question, we have to sort of appreciate and agree on a fundamental set of facts. Number one, do you think right now, one of the greatest changes in the world of work is that people are not staying in a company as long as they used to, right? We, in the last 10 years, we've gone from people staying 5 years in a company to people staying less than 4 years. And the age group 25 to 35 is staying 2.5 years, and that's declining. Okay. Do you think leadership team, HR team, whoever you're talking to, do you think that number is going to change? Do you think people in the future are going to stay longer? Oh, we're just in a dip and it's going to come back and people are going to stay longer. Do you think that's true? And the answer unequivocally, and I always have dissenters, so let's say 99% is, no, I don't. I don't think people are going to stay long in the future. Well, why is that? That's probably because there's more transparency to new opportunities than any time in history, Okay. I can see more. I don't even need to work for a company anymore. I could be a podcaster. I could be a YouTuber. I could be creating music on SoundCloud and publishing. I could be a gig worker. I don't have to work for someone else. I have more like new industries being born than any time in history. So we've got a demographic of workers who are like, holy crap. I could go lots of places and I could see, thanks to LinkedIn. Thank you. You're welcome. I can see how I can apply my skills and experiences in ways I never had visibility to before. Right.
Yeah.
Never. And so that's fundamentally exciting as a parent that my kids can go lots of different places. But as an employer, it's terrifying because my people are seeing so much what's possible. Not just that, what people are paying, what benefits they have,
yeah,
how beautiful their buildings are, Lady Gaga's coming over and singing to the staff, mm-hmm, and LeBron
that's
James
real.
Is shooting free throws with the team. Like, that's just insane. So, if I'm a leader and I'm looking at just that one picture, okay, I'm going, wow, I don't think I should fight hard for retention anymore. I should fight hard to expect my people are not going to stay. So that means building alumni programs. Like, let's keep in touch with people for the entirety of their journey and care about them their whole career, not just when they work for us. Let's, when they quit, not say, oh, 2 weeks notice. No, tomorrow's your last day. Get out. You don't like us. We don't like you. I'm not sexy. You're not sexy. That's so unhealthy. So I think we need to step back and say, okay, let's build to expect them probably not to stay. So what does that mean? That means if I get a job that takes someone 5 years to understand and to do, I'm gonna be constantly shooting myself in the foot and be disappointed because they're not going to stay 5 years. So maybe I need to re-engineer that job so two people can figure it out in 6 months, right? And so the usual response is, well, Steve, that's hard. Yeah, it is hard because it's different. But the architecture that was built was not for people to be leaving so fast. Now people are leaving fast. Second thing, this is more for HR leaders. Hey, do you realize that if you agree that most people are not going to stay as long as they used to, every one of your benefits, everyone is built around retention.
Mm.
Every single one. The longer you stay, the more vacation you get, the more 401k uh-huh. you get, the more 401k match you get, more eligibility for promotion. But you just told me your people probably aren't going to stay. So why have you oriented your whole program for that? Exhibit 3, compensation. Okay. I did a poll on LinkedIn a few months ago and said, where did you have the greatest career leap in your career? In your company that you were staying in, leaving to go to a new job, or starting your own company? 70% said it was either leaving to another company or starting their own business.
Mm.
70%.
Mm.
And that's just
wild.
A fact. Like,
yeah,
the 300 people, like,
yeah,
was it just an aberration? Is statistically significant? I think so. Ask the same question to people, exhibit number 4, where did you receive the biggest salary bump in your career? Staying in the same company, moving to another job? 75% moving to another job.
Yeah.
You look at them and they, hey, this company's great. The grass is greener. They're looking at you like you're perfect. They don't,
yeah,
know all your flaws and you don't know theirs yet. So
exactly,
you're worth more. And in a market where people are hard to find, it's much easier. So what are companies doing about that? Because we budget in HR, we budget for your annual increase from 0 to 10% usually. You don't budget for new hires. You just pay what you got to pay.
Yeah.
And so talent has figured out, like, that's broken. This,
yeah,
compensation system, the benefits system, and reward systems are broken. So as leaders, my advice is we're going to have to experiment and build some new practices. And the last one that's a really, really big one, and I think this is the biggest problem that I'm going to focus on in 2026, is the need for new skills by organizations has never been at the pace that we need today. I need new skills faster than any time in history. And the,
yeah,
greatest example is 5 years ago, LinkedIn said the hottest skill that is on, is being sought after right now, the hottest job is what's called a prompt engineer. Okay. Go into AI with a special prompt and get all the data. Well, guess what? Do you know how many prompt engineer jobs are posted on LinkedIn today? Krispy Kreme, Dunkin' Donut, nothing.
Well, because we're all prompt engineers now. We're
that's
all
right.
Prompt.
The,
yeah,
technology advanced to the point where we don't need a prompt engineer. And that's the world we're living in. Like, oh my God,
yeah,
we need to have that. Oh my God. Like, I was joking the other day, someone put a post out, senior AI engineer. Like, well, how many of those are out there? Because this technology hasn't even been,
yeah,
around long enough for there to be much of a pool. But that's a big challenge for leaders. If I need new skills and I know my people aren't going to stay around a long time, who's responsible for building the new skills? Because us in HR, listen, we know when the things get rough, who's the first team that gets knocked out? Learning,
yep,
and development.
Yep.
Yeah, let's get rid of learning and development. They're just a sort of a
nice
fringe benefit.
Yes.
Nice to have.
Yes.
No, I'm sorry. That is core to your future.
Yes.
It's growing your people. So what leaders are going to have to do, because schools aren't ready for this, governments aren't ready for this, and businesses definitely are not ready to grow people fast enough to meet the skill demands. So what's going to have to happen is your job is no longer just doing, it's learning and doing.
Oh my God.
It's going to be pretty close to 50%. And that doesn't mean, Erin's going to come in with her professors from, USC, and that's not Southern Cal, it's South Carolina.
South Carolina, thank you.
That's right. Let's go Gamecocks. So
I'm a Clemson fan, though. I went to Clemson.
Okay. All right, Tigers. Go Tigers.
Okay. Thank you.
So you're going to, when I tell this to people, like, hey, we've got a massive deficit of new skills. So who owns fixing that problem? Right. And everyone's like, well, not me. Well, right. Because you didn't build your business to address growing your people at the rate you need to. And the schools aren't sure what to build because when they ask you what skills you need, you don't have an answer for them. And governments are just like, I'm not sure how this is going to work. So, by the way, as an aside, the companies that are struggling with this the least are the ones who've partnered with universities very closely.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
That's a little clue.
Fun fact. Yeah. I have so many thoughts to unpack from this one answer. Like, you literally, I could go 700 ways. I got to land the plane. Land the plane.
We're going to be every episode this month, I think. That's what I see is happening right now.
Yeah, I know. I'm like, oh God, gotta land. But I'm really thinking about your last thing you just said, Steve, which is like, I even think back to my college experience 20 plus years ago. I'm using zero things. I have a communications degree, so there's that anyway. But the technology, the landscape, the things that exist in the world and that I use in my business today did not exist 25 plus years ago. They didn't.
Okay, can I debate you on that?
Yeah.
I think you're wrong.
Okay.
I think, look at what you're doing right now. You are.
I'm communicating.
In the business of communication. That's right.
I'm not going to hate on Clemson. I'm just going to tell you that learning a bunch of communication theories was great in theory. I should have done I did a little media minor. They didn't have a full media program. But keep going, Steve. Keep going.
Let me tell you, because the comment you made is a definite trigger for me in a healthy way. So I am the son of a minister and a social worker. My mom ran daycare centers. My dad's an Episcopal minister who moved from pure ministry into a Episcopal school and became the headmaster of a school. My family was as anti-business, not in a negative way, sort of like, no, it's about being an artist, a writer, a service provider. That's how we roll. Okay.
Yeah,
my sister, my older sister is a minister. My younger sister is a writer and my brother's an artist. Okay. And I'm the one, my parents probably go, what happened here? Yeah. Like where did we go wrong with this guy? But when I went to college, I had no clue what I wanted to do. None. When I graduated, I had no clue what I wanted to do. I chose history. Why? Because I liked it.
Yeah.
I liked reading. I liked thinking. I liked, and it was modern European. And everyone wants to know, well, when did that begin? Well, 1789, William of Orange. Anyway, it's a long story. But people go, history, and you became basically the top of your profession, the number one, the first chief HR officer at LinkedIn. Like, you got to the top of the heap. Like, how did that happen? And I go, because I chose discovery and learning as something that really excited me. And I'm a huge sports fan, and everything about HR is everything about sports. Who plays well together? What's the right environment for teams to win? Huge. And not only did I play three sports in college, it was Division III, nothing fancy, but I love watching how people handle situations of pressure or being behind or winning or losing, or I was the star and now I'm not the star, or I loved our last coach, he quit, the new coach hates me, I'm not playing. How do you handle that? And so those dynamics in college, outside of the classroom and in the classroom, massively prepared me. And that's why when people say, oh, the pandemic totally screwed up a generation, I go, no, it didn't. It gave adaptability to our kids on a degree that they've never seen. They saw their teachers struggle. They saw their parents struggle.
Oh, it was so humanizing.
Don't tell me the academic loss isn't greatly offset by the adaptability win. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, for sure.
When I think about, your earlier question, and I just think about these kinds of things, I think, wow, we have got to create environments where that learning is really rewarded and appreciated, because our market's going to change. So I need my people to constantly change too. And if we look at last example, and I'll throw it back to you. The automobile industry today is a fascinating study in how what you used to be really good at isn't worth anything anymore. Tesla today is worth $1.3 trillion. If you take GM, Ford, Honda, Toyota, BMW, Mercedes, it's not even worth $500 billion, okay? All the value of those companies combined.
Yeah.
And Tesla is run by a lunatic, okay? He's got six part-time jobs.
Agreed.
And the company hasn't been around 30 years, and they're killing it. So the question is, why, and this answers a bunch of your other questions, like what's the leadership asset that they have? What's their talent strategy? They haven't been around 30 years. They don't have 100 years of experience building cars like their competitors do. And that's why they're winning, because they're not stuck in 100 years of this is how we roll. And if you're not sure, go see the movie Ford versus Ferrari, you know? Yeah. So mic drop.
Mic drop. Boom. Podcast over. Steve, you're out. No, you're like, this is so, first of all, your energy is awesome. I love it. It jazzes me. I'm like jazzed right now. Okay. These are my jazz hands. Y'all can't see the jazz hands. Just
I was going to wonder, why is her hand shaking? Yeah, okay. She's feeling it.
Mm-hmm. She's shaking. These are jazz hands. So I'm thinking we're taking it full circle back to the learning component. And when budgets are cut, L&D is the first thing to go. I know, because I work with L&D and we're the first, they're like, bye, contract. And in my opinion, it's so, there's a quote that I love, and it's a CFO and a CEO talking, and the CFO or the CEO says, well, what happens, you know, to the CFO if we don't train our people? And then the CFO says, well, we don't have budget for that. And then the CEO goes, well, what happens if we don't train our people? And then they stay.
Yeah. I love that one.
Yeah. And that is like, that sticks in my head all the time. And
yeah. And it's also got the added feature. Let me add into that. A lot of people will say, listen, Steve, you just said people are leaving faster. Why would I train them to go arm my competitors? And the rebuttal to that is, well, if you don't, then who's going to want to come here, because you're not growing your people, number one. Number two, what if they stay? And then you've the market's outgrown your talent. So 100% agree.
Yeah. Okay, my peeps, let me quickly pause, because if this conversation is hitting home, I want you to know we offer a highly interactive leadership workshop designed for moments exactly like this. Okay, this 2-hour workshop experience can be delivered in person for up to 100 people or virtually for up to 50 people on Zoom. Our seasoned improv facilitators at Improve It will lead your team through high energy activities and customized debriefs centered around one core idea: communication plus inspiration equals motivation. Now, participants are going to learn how to communicate more effectively with their teams, inspire and empower their peers through their words and actions, and motivate the people around them to set higher goals and actually achieve them. I want to dive into this learning piece individually, and especially just from your seat in HR and being at such a company like LinkedIn. LinkedIn is one of our clients, by the way. We worked with LinkedIn in days. Let's go. Yeah. So we have a great relationship and inside look in the culture, which is so awesome. But I think for us, just even as a small business owner, I've had my VP of client experience just celebrated her 9th year yesterday, like literally, and our director of talent, 11. Like I'm like, when you say these things, I'm the person going, no, Steve, no. They can't go. But I will say, and I'm not tooting our own horn, it is a core value. We measure our success on our core values. We literally, every hire we make, every performance review we do, biannual and annual, we are measuring ourselves and executing against these core values. And one of those core values is explore more. It's explore more. And we are curious. And I feel like from my seat as a small business owner, and then I would love for you to put this in context for our peeps who have multiple teams and different personality types, is getting really specific and trying to get really specific with each individual on what it is they want to do and how they want to grow, and then finding a way to fuel that growth in the business. That is my take. I want to hear your take on this. How can Sosin in HR, okay, at Smith & Smith, who is overseeing all these different teams and units, how can she help these leaders of these specific teams keep their people by executing learning opportunities? How does that work?
Well, first, I think what I would say is stop fighting for retaining people and start fighting for retaining relationships, okay? So if you tell your people, listen, I care about you for your whole career, not just when you work for me.
Yeah.
And I want to create the greatest learning journey for you, the growth journey. And if that exceeds the bounds of what the opportunities are here, I'm still in your corner, right? Then what happens is when Susan goes or Jimmy goes, they're an angel in the universe that's going to send other people, hey, I did leave, you know, that really cool organization, but man, I learned so much there. And those people, they're just the nicest, kindest, like greatest people. And I was in Spain recently talking to some of the largest employers over there, and their biggest pet peeve just jumped off the page. So what's really irritating you right now? It's like the young generation, you know, they're just disloyal. And I said, no, they're not. They're the most loyal generation, just not to what you want them to be loyal to. They're loyal to growth.
Yeah.
And you want them to be loyal to the company, but you're not providing the growth. If you don't provide the growth, they're not going to be loyal. So, and that's in a world where we are scaring this generation of workers more than any generation in history. Robots are coming for you. AI is going to take your job, et cetera, et cetera. You know, oh, what should I study? I don't know, because all the jobs in 20 years are going to be completely different. So good luck to you. Or you've got the extremes of, you know, Elon Musk saying there won't be jobs in the future. Oh, thanks. That's really gratifying. And so what you have to do is sort of say, listen, and this is how I beat Google, Apple, Facebook, Twitter when I was building LinkedIn. And let me tell you, we could not outpay them. We couldn't out-perk them. We couldn't out-free food, on-site childcare center. Sure. Nothing. We had nothing. But what we did say was, listen, the problem we're solving really matters. We're trying to help people find their dream job. You want to solve that problem? No one's ever solved it. It's a worthy problem for you, for your children, for your next generation. Second thing is, I will make this the greatest learning part of your journey that you've ever had. I can't pay you what Google did. And by the way, if you want to go to Google, let's get them on the phone right now. I've got buddies over there. They would love to have you. If cash in your hand right now is more important, that's what I want for you. I will support you in that. You know? And they're like, what? And so you know what happens when you start to say, well, maybe this isn't the right place for you. No, yeah. Maybe it is. Then yeah. They start coming around. But that I think is really, it's really hard right now. This conversation is really scary for people to say, because I'm used to saying, everything I do is built to keep you here. And I think that is an unachievable outcome. If you believe that I can still build great value, even without people staying a long time, right? I can still do that. And if I just did a study of the five of the most successful companies in the last 5 years, who've made the most amount of money, the most amount of value creation, the most amount of stock growth. And it came down to Microsoft, Broadcom, Apple, Google, and NVIDIA. And do you know what the median tenure is for those companies? If I combine all those?
Please tell me.
4 years. 4 years.
Wow. No.
So the companies that are making the most, growing the most, making the biggest impact in the economy, are they doing it because of all those 30-year service awards that they're giving out? No. They're doing it because in a world that's changing, it happens that new people with new ideas, new perspectives, new ways of solving problems, we used to call it diversity, but we're not allowed to use that anymore. Those people bring enormous power to you in a world that's changing.
Yes.
And that's why Ford's, you know, bless their soul. They're real. I mean, it's hard to be an incumbent dinosaur right now. They're doing great things. But it's easier for Tesla to change because Tesla has one version of software in their cars and Ford has 900 versions of software.
Yes. Oh my God. And they did come out with the new Bronco. You know what I'm saying? They did release the Bronco. I just got it.
That's right. And you know, good retro, a beautiful
good
car.
Retro. But, yes.
But to answer your question, like this is the big challenge, which is how do I deliver creating value when my people need new skills really fast and I know they're probably not going to stay. And it's rethinking the whole model of leadership, which means I got to build learning into your day-to-day. You know, instead of, and this is why it will cost some money and it will need to shift the P&L and how we budget, but instead of you delivering, most business plans are built for you give me value 95% of the day. And then I'm going to budget 5% for vacation, sick day, PTO, and then some, you know, a class you get to go to, and we'll do some tuition reimbursement. Now it's like, we need people with new skills faster. So I'm going to give you, Aaron, some new projects, some new skills, some new experiences, some new teams, new leader to work with. So while you're adding value, I'm filling you, not by sending you off to some class or bringing some professor from USC in here. You see what I'm saying? Like,
that's
how that model has got to shift. And that is hard because we don't have a lot of examples of that. Like, well, who's doing that?
Wait, Steve, I'm raising my hand. Nobody can see again. I'm using my hands, everyone. My hand is in the air. I have a case study for you. You ready? Because this is true life. In 2024, I did release a book, and it is called I See You. A full chapter in this book is called 879 Jen, okay? This was a juxtaposition of a leader I had, a former leader named Chad, quote unquote, in the book, who wanted to climb the corporate ladder, used me as a rung, and literally made my life complete hell because they wanted to get ahead and they had no cure, like absolutely no idea what I really wanted. They just wanted to use me as extra hands. I left that job and found a job with Jen. I stayed with Jen in a business development job at a recruiting firm, Steve, a recruiting firm for 5 years. I had never done sales in my life, but I stayed because Jen, not just to me, but to everyone in that office, saw potential in all of us. She knew that I was doing improv outside of work. She came to my shows. She encouraged me. She taught me how to network. She taught me how to build relationships. She taught me how to trust. Then, guess what? I had this idea called Improve It. And I said, Jen, I have this idea. She goes, well, why don't we talk to United Airlines, one of our clients, about it? You could see if you could do a workshop for them. My first unpaid workshop was with United Airlines. My second unpaid workshop was with United Airlines. My third paid workshop was with United Airlines that Jen knew that I was going off in the workday to do for somebody else. And I literally to this day cannot tell you how her leadership has impacted everything I do. She helped me find learning opportunities within that job to scale my career, to help me network, to help me learn how to do sales better, to help me figure out how I can gain more traction within one client and account. All of those skills I use. She not only saw me for me, but then when the day came, I told her I was leaving to build Improve It. She created a full scavenger hunt of all my favorite places and had me wear a GoPro on my head, Steve. This is real. To capture the memories and gave me the best send-off. She is my biggest cheerleader to this day. And then full circle, she was looking for a new job. I had a friend of mine who was the president of Chicago Sherm at the time. I said, hey, he goes, I'm hiring. She's had that job for the past, I don't know, 10 years and is thriving in that new role. But she helped me and I full circle helped her. And it's been like the most beautiful relationship because her leadership has a domino effect on how I lead my team.
And what I would say to all the listeners, I mean, replay that story and be that person, be the Jen, you know, that if we had more Jens out there, this world would be a better place. And the one of the examples that I love similar to that is Chick-fil-A.
Yeah.
And now I was in Nashville talking about Chick-fil-A and they interrupted me and said, Steve, we don't call it Chick-fil-A here. I go, oh, did they have a new brand here or something? They go, no, we call it God's Chicken, Steve. I'm like, oh, okay. Thank
you. It really
you
is,
for correcting
though.
Me.
Yes, it really is.
And what Chick-fil-A did a few years ago, I don't think they do it anymore. On their career website, they featured ex-employees saying, thank you, Chick-fil-A, for getting me my dream job to become an ER nurse, to become a school teacher, to become an educator. Thank you. And Chick-fil-A saying, we're fast food. We know we're not your destination. We want to be the best part of your journey, you know? And that I love. That is mature. That's like, hey,
yes.
And if you deliver that, you know, a good year in fast food is your turnover is maybe only 600%, which means you get someone for 6 months, okay? If you can take that to 7 months or 8 months, that's a lot of savings. That's a lot of extra revenue, right? And they've done it. They're like, okay, this is going to be the greatest learning part of your journey. And we want to help you get, oh, you don't know English as well as you want to? Not only will we ESL you, we'll ESL your whole family because we found when the whole family goes through it, it's a lot stickier. And those are the kinds of examples to give us hope, right? That different models can work and it's not this whole, the only teams that win are the teams that are together the longest. And that's why I love showing those five companies I gave you the example of before, like, nah, this world that's changing really, really fast, where how we began this whole discussion is more things changing, more things out of our control, more things uncertain. So if I play to that, that must mean I need new ideas and new people faster than ever before. And maybe it used to be a deficit or a weakness to have lots of new people. Now it could be a real strength, you know?
Totally. I love, okay. Steve, you know what? Some episodes I do for the peeps. Today was for me. I needed this. Okay. I needed it. Wow.
Good.
I'm not even going to lie. And peeps, this was also for you, but really I'm taking away a lot here. So I can't even tell you, I could talk to you for hours. You have such a fascinating insight into leadership. And it's so, I mean, it's what we need to hear right now. I got to do one more fun thing with you though. Okay.
All right.
It's a lightning round. Okay.
Okay.
Just your instincts only. Okay.
Let me put my seatbelt on. Okay.
You ready? The fastest answers that come to you.
Do I have to say, I'm going to answer it already. No, because.
No, because. There's no, because or yes, and. It's just whatever comes to mind for you. Okay.
Okay.
You ready? Here we go. Lightning round.
Quick, snappy answers. Quick ones.
Snappy answers. Yeah. Okay. Yep. You got it. Here we go. Okay. What's more dangerous for leaders? Overconfidence or avoidance?
Overconfidence.
Okay. Why?
Overconfidence, because it will get you in trouble before you know what, and then it's really hard to recover, and it's just going to mount and mount and mount, and then you're going to just be living in a stress bomb.
Mm-hmm. I love that. Okay, another question. One leadership skill AI can never fake?
Empathy.
Oh, 100%. The secret sauce. Okay, worst leadership phrase of the decade?
Thinking that technology is the best way to approach a new problem.
Okay. And one thing leaders should stop pretending they know.
Everything. Stop pretending you know everything.
That's the best answer ever. I love it. Oh, that's good. Okay. Steve, you're the man.
So great to be here, Aaron.
How can our peeps find you?
Yeah, sure. You could find me on LinkedIn, obviously. Please connect with me if you have questions. I'd love to answer them. I have a book, Workquake. Please check it out. One word, Workquake, on Amazon or anywhere. You can find me on my website, stevecadigan.com. Those are the real, I'm not really active on other social platforms. I do have a podcast that is AI generated, which means I do the script and then a voice that sounds like me, but it's not really me, through 11 Labs, delivers like a 5 to 7 minute talk on some topic every week. So it's called Workquake Weekly.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And it's just now I'm really getting it. The topic of the last month that's hitting again and again is how companies are using AI to eliminate entry-level jobs and how horrible a strategy that is.
Horrible.
And how it's
horrible.
Cutting out the future of the workforce. But
okay, wait. We're gonna link it. We're gonna put all these in the show notes for
great.
You. So everybody can just click. And then I just am curious, why not your voice? Why not your voice?
Time.
I feel you, Steve. I feel you.
Yeah. When I published my book and I had to decide, you know, hey, it was during the pandemic and they're like, hey, you could get in the studio, Steve, but have you ever recorded for like 10 hours?
Oh, yeah.
No. Well, some days you're going to be hoarse. We're going to have to retake. You're going to stumble. And I was like, okay, so I paid someone else to do it. And then I heard someone else reading his book, David Goggins. I was like, I can't get enough of David Goggins. So I'm like, and he did something which I'm going to do for my next one, which is, he hired someone to read it, but then he did an interview at the end of every chapter. Let me give you the inside of that. Because people have told me, hey, Steve, you got a really great voice. Like, you got to use your voice.
Yeah.
So, but listen to an episode, Aaron, and tell me if you can tell. Like, my kids and my wife can tell. It's not me.
Yeah.
Most people can't.
Oh, my God. That is crazy.
Yeah. 11 Labs is really, really powerful. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Very cool. I'm learning something new every second of every day on this show. So ABL, always be learning. You know what I'm saying, Steve? There it is, full circle moment. And Steve, I trust, okay, our intention came full circle. You're the man. I'm so glad we had you on the show. You have given so much great valuable insight. Peeps, go find Steve. And thanks for playing. Okay, my peeps, as we wrap, here is what I want to leave you with. Leadership in this AI era is not about having all the answers. It's about creating space for better questions. The leaders who will thrive are the ones who stay curious, stay human, and stay connected. I want to thank my guest, Steve, for challenging us and reminding us that leadership still matters deeply, especially now. And today, here is your Playdate practice challenge for the week, okay? This is what I want you to take away. I want you to ask your team one question. What part of AI excites you and what part makes you nervous? Then I want you to just listen, not try to fix it. Just listen. This is hard for people like myself, you and me, who are continuously trying to improve ourselves, right? Pun intended, I started a company about it. We'll say so myself. But just listen, no fixing, okay? If today's episode resonated, I want you to share it with a leader who needs the reminder that they matter more than the tools they use. Also, if you could consider leaving a 5-star review for us on the show, it would mean so much. It literally makes an entire team of humans do a happy dance every time we get a review. So my peeps, until next time, keep playing, keep leading, and keep showing up. I'll see you then.